All right, welcome, great patriotic Americans, to July 17th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I'm your host, Joseph DeCristoforo, and for the next 5 minutes, I'll talk about America, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But let's begin the show as we normally do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Let's everybody stand up, face the flags, and put our right hands over our hearts. And let's begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Very nice. All right, so now on to today's program. Disneyland opens up. Happy summer, everybody. Plus, I'll talk about gerrymandering and where that came from. Gould invents the laser. The Minnesota Twins turn 2 triple plays against the Red Sox and still lose the game. And Casey Anthony is released from prison. All right, so now let's get started. 1955. Disneyland opens its doors. Walt Disney, born in Chicago in 1901, was a man truly ahead of his time. Mickey Mouse first appeared in the very first animated film to use sound. The film was called Steamboat Willie, and Disney himself provided the voice for Mickey. Later on, he came up with his first feature-length cartoon, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. These cartoons were huge hits. Disney wanted to accommodate his fans who came by to visit his studio, but how boring. It was just a studio with his drawings all over the place. So, he came up with the idea of a theme park after visiting several of them with his children and purchased 160 acres of orange groves in Anaheim, about 25 miles southeast of LA, and began construction. Opening day was a day full of surprises. About 14,000 invitation-only tickets were sent, but about 28,000 people showed up with counterfeit tickets. Main Street had been freshly paved that morning, and the weather was an unusual 101 degrees, and ladies were losing their shoes in the melting blacktop. Some of Disney's Hollywood friends showed up to run live TV reports: Art Linkletter, Bob Cummings, and Ronald Reagan. Cummings was busted making out with one of the dancers, not knowing he was live on the air. Then later, lost his microphone trying to cover the story about Mr. Toad's wild ride. All that was cute and fun until the water situation happened. Seems that there was a local plumber strike and water was running out. Disney had to choose between running toilets or water fountains. He chose toilets, and the guests got really thirsty. Walt Disney survived the day, however, calling it Black Sunday. These days, Disneyland in Anaheim is visited by 14 million people and takes in nearly $3 billion per year. There are locations throughout the world, of course, a much bigger one in Orlando, Florida, as well as international locations in Paris, Hong Kong, and Tokyo. Disneyland, like a boss! Wait. 1744. Happy birthday, Elbridge Gerry. He was a Democrat Republican who served as America's vice president under James Madison. He's best known for inventing gerrymandering, which is where electoral district lines are drawn to accommodate the favored party in that area. Interestingly enough, we use the word gerrymandering even though it's actually pronounced gerrymandering, named after him. He's the only signer of the Declaration of Independence to be buried in Washington, D.C. Okay, 1920. Happy birthday, Gordon Gould. He was the first person to use the word laser in his technology. But he didn't patent it and spent 37 years of his life trying to claim the rights to his laser invention. 1905. Oregon Iron and Steel get their meteorite returned. The Williamite meteorite, discovered by OINS neighbor Ellis Hughes in 1902, is the largest meteorite in North America ever found and the sixth largest in the world. It probably landed in Canada or Montana, then was relocated to the Willamette Valley during the Missoula floods around 13,000 years ago. Since then, it's belonged to the indigenous folks of Willamette, namely the Confederate tribes of the Grand Ronde community of Oregon. Fast forward to 1902, when Ellis Hughes stumbled across it, he was hoping it would make him a gajillionaire. Then he realized that this massive iron rock colossus was on his neighbor's property. Hughes tried to buy the property, but the giant steel company wasn't willing to sell it to him. So Hughes constructed a flatbed cart out of wooden logs, took his wife, 15-year-old son, old horse, and for 3 months hoisted it onto the cart and dragged it 3/4 of a mile to his property. Then he built a shack around it and opened a freak peep show. I suppose it's not as bad as the story in the movie Creepshow, where Stephen King makes a cameo in his own movie, who finds a meteorite and then touches it and slowly turns into a bush. This story is almost as bad, and it's actually nonfiction. Hughes charged 25 cents per attendee, but pretty much his only spectator would be his neighbor's attorney, saying he knew that Hughes took the rock. Not sure what gave it away, except for a giant fresh crater with worms crawling out and the ground where a meteorite just was 3 months ago. He offered to purchase it back for $50 and avoid a lawsuit, but Hughes wouldn't even hear of it. Oregon Iron and Steel therefore successfully sued Hughes on this day in 1905 and got the rock back just in time to display at the Lewis and Clark Exposition in Oregon. After that, they sold it to Mrs. William Dodge for $20,600, who in turn donated it to the American Museum of Natural History. The Clackamas tribe, as well as other indigenous Americans, called it Tamanawas, or Heavenly Visitor. They claim original ownership since before the 20th century and have sued the museum in an attempt to get the rock back. But last I heard, no such luck. And finally, 2011, in what Time magazine calls the social media trial of the century, Casey Anthony is released from jail just 12 days after being found not guilty of killing her baby, which was a verdict that shocked America. Either the jury didn't understand the concept of reasonable doubt, or the prosecution had to rely on too heavily on party girl Casey Anthony's bad character and judgment, because they had been unable to show conclusive evidence of the murder, even though there was duct tape on the mouth of the baby's decomposed skull.
So that's going to wrap it up, my friends, for July 17th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Check out the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's program. When was the last time you've been to Disneyland? Did you have a good time? Is it really the happiest place on Earth, or just a madhouse? What about that Casey Anthony story? And what did you think of the verdict? So yeah, let me know what you think. You can also take a shot at some of the multiple choice quizzes while you're on there. And be sure to check out tomorrow's program. We'll talk about the Second Battle of Marne, magnetic tape, Ted Kennedy, and Jersey Joe Walcott. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can catch me on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle is JDUSHL. So until then, thanks for listening, everyone, and thanks for being great patriotic Americans. We'll do this again tomorrow.